The following podcast contains language that is not suitable for everybody.
I'm so sorry for whatever's popping up on your computer. Oh, these aren't what I want.
No.
These aren't what I want.
I thought we were looking for tiny, sexy lasso.
Oh, sorry, well, I am terrified to see what that's going to bring up. I'm trying to find
That's the name of this week's episode, by the way, Rachel. Tiny, sexy lasso. Please note it.
All right, moving on. Do we get into this fucking
goodness.
Shit show or
oh,
what?
Oh, my goodness. Welcome to Super Skull, Vault of Midnight's weekly new Comic Day audio digest. My name is Nick Wybar. I work at Vault of Midnight. I'm joined by
Cowboy Curtis.
Tied for first for the sexiest dude I know, Marcus Schwimmer.
How you doing, guys?
How you doing,
pal? I'm just letting you know I'm going to unzip my terry cloth onesie
just
a quarter of the way. Let some of the heat out.
You know what? Don't, because you got to save some.
You got to save some.
You got to pace yourself.
Got to pace myself. By the end of the episode, if everything goes according to plan, it'll be fully unzipped.
I'm also here with Curtis Sullivan, also tied for first place, sexiest dude I know. Curtis.
Yes.
How you doing, pal?
I'm doing really nice.
I really like your tiny little cowboy hat that you're wearing right now.
Thank you. I love it. I love the way that it's tight around my chin.
Uh-huh.
And I can position it like so it's like, how is that hat still on your head?
How's your circulation? You feeling okay?
Oh, it's great.
Looks a little tight.
No, it's wonderful.
I don't know why it just ties your whole outfit together, but it's just like really, really working for you in a sexy way.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
I'm just being real with you.
Well, that's what I want.
I just want to let you know I found that terry cloth onesie on Etsy.
This guy here?
$79.
Well,
that's a deal. I'm buying this. It doesn't come with the belt. Oh.
Hey, don't wear it with black socks, though. Can I say that?
Yeah, of course, but...
Because they just had some bozo with the black socks, and it's like the worst.
I just couldn't be more pleased to be in a recording studio with you guys today. I feel like a magic man today.
You are a magic man.
Can I tell you?
Magic how?
I'm feeling the juices. Sometimes the podcast juices just start a flowing. My podcast gland swells like up a lot.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like I need to probably take like an anti-inflammatory or something.
Let's hope this podcast is your anti-inflammatory.
It's going to have to be. Woo! It's going to be a good one today. I can just tell. We have we got some Detroit news for you. We got a little bit of regular news. You zipping it down a little bit already? Pace yourself, buddy. It's going to be a long day.
That's the thing.
Some information about DC Rebirth. We have some big picks, as is our want, on a weekly basis.
Correct.
We've done that before. Yep.
I still haven't. I'm just calling it now. I haven't thought of a metaphor for what our big picks are going to be like. But by the time we get there, I think it's going to be... It's probably going to be sexy themed, because that's what we're working with.
That's
a lot,
right.
a lot of hotness.
Yeah. Our taser today is focused on the Comics Code of Authority, and it's some of the most fun I've ever had looking into
the sexiest of topics.
Oh, my God. When you think sexy, you think...
Comic Code Authority.
The Comics Code of Authority circa 1954.
You think of congressional hearings on decency. Yes.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But first of all, before we get into any of that, Curtis...
Yo.
Please, what's going on with Vault of Midnight Detroit? I need an update.
Oh, Vault of Midnight Detroit. Let's talk about it.
Please.
We got some walls that are being built, yo.
Walls?
Yeah, they're putting in walls now.
You need walls? You're such a sellout, man.
I know.
You need walls in your comic shop?
Well, yeah.
I thought you were going for like this free form, like this new way of doing comics.
Kind of, but with walls. And we'll have some pictures of those walls on Friday.
Like the drywall framing?
I think there's going to be some framing. I don't know if we're actually going to have... sheetrock hung yet.
Probably not.
But we'll see.
Cool.
So that's cool. That's happening. Oh, and just in general, check Vault of Midnight Detroit's Facebook page for photos, little social media contests, stuff like this, updates, if you will.
Yeah, if you think construction photos are interesting,
yeah,
and I do.
Of course.
Check every Friday, because we're going to have some new stuff up. We had some really cool images of the concrete being poured last week.
Oh, it was so exciting.
Yeah, it was really cool.
That was really neat.
Yeah, you could see some rebar.
Uh-huh.
And some power boxes.
Yep.
Oh, it was awesome.
So cool.
What else we got? We sent our sign permits off to the city, you dudes.
Oh, my God.
Oh, sign permits?
We designed a sign for the store. It's a store, so it's going to need a sign out front. We designed that sign.
Sell out.
I know, dude. We're so corporate.
Why don't we just like, okay, is it too late to just bag this whole thing?
Uh-huh.
We'll go, we'll put the new shop in your basement, no sign, in a residential neighborhood.
I think that's a great idea, Nick.
Oh, my God. We'd save so much money now that I think about
that's
it. And
true.
We'd get cool points.
We would. People would be like, oh, my gosh. You have to know. You have to be a member of the club.
Yeah. That'll be the next vault.
Got it.
In the meantime, our sign permits are at the city, which is a really arduous and horrible process typically.
Yes.
But fingers crossed, I got a good feeling about this one.
Me that's too.
I think it's going to go well.
Our sign company's awesome. So dude Joe we're working with is just killing it for us.
Yes.
So we hope all goes well there.
Joe from Metro Detroit Signs. Big up to Joe.
What
what's up?
Joe Do.
Dude's awesome.
We love that dude. Yeah, he's cool as heck. He's yeah, so that's a pace. We also have some apparel that has been designed by Philliam H. Macy.
Mm-hmm.
As I like to call him.
It's not his name at all.
It's not his name. His name is Philip Wong.
You've probably heard his name every single week on this podcast because we say his name in the credits. He does a lot of stuff for us.
Like so much stuff for Vault of Midnight. I can't wait till Steve, the man in charge of the money, gets the bill for all the design work we had him do.
When our co-owner and partner and life mate Steve sees the bill, there's going to be a reckoning, my friend.
I will be getting a stern phone call.
Yes, you will.
Yes.
I'm really glad, and I'm pretty sure that I don't have to be on that phone call, and I'm feeling really sweet about
you
it.
You can deny the whole thing. Like, Curtis and Phil were
I tried to stop him. He wouldn't listen to me.
We record that phone call. We could release it as a supplementary episode.
Yeah. Oh, there you go.
Of just Steve being like, Curtis, it's Steve. Got the bill from Phil. We're going to have to talk about this. Oh, my God. I can see it. It's going to be the best.
We'll edit it. We'll put music underneath it.
Yeah.
Wow. It's going to be rough. But we got a ton of stuff coming, you guys. New hats.
Mm-hmm.
New shirts.
Yes.
So many designs. City-specific shirts, you guys. New stickers. Skull caps. I just can't wait. We'll be releasing images in the coming weeks. I am crazy juice. Phil has just knocked it out of the park this time.
Mm-hmm.
Curtis, again. When you say city-specific shirts, are you announcing that Detroit, Ann Arbor, and Grand Rapids will all be getting their own specific Vault of Midnight t-shirt?
Yes, as relates to their city.
Oh, my God. The repping that's about to take place.
It's about to be nuts.
The reppening. Oh, it's going to be a reckoning and a reppening.
That's great.
So that happened. We're hiring for Vault of Midnight Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Please check out our website if you're in the Detroit area, vaultofmidnight.com/jobs.
Correct.
We are starting our interviews this Friday.
Read all the instructions.
Follow them.
That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah,
just read all the. We have to read all of that stuff. We have to go through all that stuff, people.
Also, your push-up count would be highly appreciated for information.
We will do at least 10 push-ups when we interview you.
Yeah.
On Friday, we're gonna we'll be interviewing comics shop staff, potential staff, for hours.
So many hours, dude.
It's gonna be cool.
You're excited?
I'm really excited. It's gonna be great.
Nick loves this stuff.
Yeah.
He's really good at it too. So that helps. I just sit there and give people the stern eye.
That's important, though. Yeah. That's an important part of the process.
Good cop, bad cop? Is that what you're saying? Nick's good cop, you're bad cop?
Yeah, it's like smart cop, dumb, mean cop. Is really what is the
our
shtick.
That's good. Yeah.
Also, manholes. Not to talk about manholes constantly, but so they laid our floor last week, and they put in these rings that will hold the manhole covers.
Yeah.
So the rings are in place, soon to receive a manhole cover. And that's everything about what's happening in Detroit.
I both am dreading and looking forward to the day when I don't have to say manhole all the time.
Yeah.
You will say it now until the end of time. We have manholes forever.
They're fucking embedded in the floor.
Yeah, so we'll be like in the store hanging out, and people will be like, "Oh, cool manhole." I'll be like, "Yeah, that manhole." Yeah, we had to make these manholes.
I guess I need to just make peace with it, is what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's permanently part of your vocabulary now.
Fair enough. What about the news?
We just got some crumbs of news this week.
Marcus, you got any news crumbs for me?
Yeah, so they announced that Batman the Killing Joke is getting made into an animated movie. Super exciting.
Dig it.
It's going to be great. The big part about this news is that Mark Hamill has announced that he's going to reprise his role as the Joker.
He's retired from being the voice of the Joker like 3 times.
I know.
And he keeps coming back, and I love it.
Well, he's the best voice of the Joker.
That's
no
true.
One does it as well as he does.
Yeah.
And also, Kevin Conroy is coming back as the voice of Batman.
This is the core team from Batman the Animated Series.
Right.
The Bruce Timm and Tim Burton kind of animated big behemoth of the 90s.
That's right. This is if you grew up in the 90s and know anything about Batman, it's likely due to this TV show.
It's a great show.
And in a twist, it's rumored, not confirmed yet, but highly speculated that this animated movie is going to be R-rated.
It's going to have to be.
Well, yeah. The Killing Joke is
fucked up.
It's messed up, but I find it very interesting.
Go back and read that book recently.
Oh, yes.
It is intense.
Yeah.
It's crazy
hardcore.
Yeah,
it's pretty nuts.
Where was the Comics Code of Authority on that one?
Who
shut that shit down?
And then, Curtis, you got some news for us on DC Rebirth that you've been diving into.
Well, so many crumbs. They have announced nothing, you dudes, for New 52. We know that.
Good news update.
Yeah.
Sorry, I derailed you.
Gully! New 52 Superman is going to meet pre-52 Superman in one of these books coming up. How does that work? I don't know.
Isn't the difference that like one wears jeans and the other doesn't?
One's got like lines all over his costume and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we also know...
But they're identical in every other way.
Yeah, one really enjoys casual Friday so much that he made it casual every day.
Yeah.
And the other one actually wears his Superman costume. Mm-hmm. That's the difference.
Yeah.
That's going to be an exciting meetup.
Super exciting.
Jeans, really? Yup. Meetup over.
Really? Jeans?
Huh. I've been wearing the same iconic outfit for basically 75 years, and you...
But no, yeah, no, you look good.
Jeans. All right, buddy. That's a, what is that, a statement on the youth of today?
Probably.
On culture now?
Superman probably doesn't wash his jeans.
Sheesh.
I bet Superman freezes his jeans.
His entire... Fortress of Solitude is made of ice. So
he just has to walk through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He needs to hang out in his house
for a little bit. He's got ice breath, yo.
He's got ice breath.
It doesn't matter where he's at. He's just like,
and then his jeans are perfectly clean. Perfect. What else you got? What else in the news?
So we know that Superman number one in Action Comics, dudes, it's 957 is that number that we couldn't figure out last week when we were talking about. It's 957 is the new numbering for Action Comics. Those will both launch in June.
Question.
Go ahead.
Who's writing them?
We don't know.
Okay.
We have no idea yet. Peter Tomasi has been interviewed a few times, and he's dancing around the who's and the what's. We know nothing. Also, back to the Superman Wonder Woman Justice League thing, the Super League storyline that we talked about every single week.
Great title.
It's 8 issues. It's called Super League. It's running through a few books, all the Super books. Please hit up your comic shop and ask them about it. If you're hyped for Rebirth, this is the lead-in, you dudes. This 8-part Super League story is going to tie heavily into DC Rebirth.
I love the name Super League.
I hate it.
Pretty into it.
I think it's cool.
What about it?
I don't know. It just works for me.
New or original or interesting.
And that's the news for DC Rebirth.
Thanks, Curtis.
Hey, guys, real quick. I know we're looking at the timer here, but did you see that Spider-Man appearance in that Civil War trailer?
Dog.
I know you did because we watched it together and we're all super excited.
Yeah.
It was cool. It was the cool. That trailer.
Did you see how red his suit was?
It was so red.
It was so red and I loved it.
It was so vibrant and red and his eyes got bigger and smaller.
Yeah.
It was the best.
I didn't even notice that his eyes got bigger and smaller.
You didn't?
Mm-mm.
Oh, you should rewatch it.
Oh, I will.
His suit is like a living suit, which I think is awesome.
Yeah, maybe some Tony something or other. We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like a symbiote? Like Spawn suit?
Well, what else would he
nano.
Make his... Got yeah, it. Maybe there's some nanotech
some
in
tech.
There.
Some nanotech.
Oh
some
my God,
stork
so
tech.
Cool.
I say nanotech whenever I describe anything I don't understand.
Yeah. And
gamma rays, man.
I know that Curtis is super excited because we now officially know that Black Panther, T'Challa, is going to be on Iron Man's side, which makes total sense. So that's great.
It makes no sense. Shut your stupid face. It's a misunderstanding, and there's no way that he would side with Tony, the dumb face Stark.
So we can infer by this that you, in the upcoming Civil War, Marvel Civil War, you've chosen a side.
Of course.
And your side is Captain America.
Oh, yeah.
I'm just laying it out for the listener.
And Marcus, too.
Absolutely.
And he just doesn't understand. We don't understand. There's the rumor mill is something happened to Wakanda, and so T'Challa, the Black Panther, has sided with Tony Stark.
But we're all just theory jerking right now.
That is what we are doing.
Okay. We're sitting three dudes in the room, theory jerking.
Nobody knows.
Let me say this, though.
Yeah.
I watched a trailer breakdown of the trailer
on
the YouTubes.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And it was like 27 things you probably missed. The web shooters on Peter Parker's wrists are mechanical.
Oh, interesting.
That's dope as hell. I love that.
I'm into it.
Yeah,
okay, moving on.
So let's talk about some big picks.
Big picks.
Let's do it.
If a supervillain released like a virus out into the wild, mm-hmm. and those that virus that's infecting people is comics. You can think of us like the nanobots that are seeking out those comics for targeted destruction.
Yeah.
Yes.
That got away from me a little bit.
No, and what's left at the end is just the best.
Just sweet white cell comic book goodness.
And we're here for you.
Only that good good.
Mm.
Okay. I love it.
And what do you guys got? What'd you pick this week?
Oh, Nick picked a huge book with math on it.
Oh,
weird, weird.
Shut the fuck up.
So weird.
Curtis Sullivan.
My big pick of the week is Power Man and Iron Fist number 2 by David Walker and Sanford Green.
How was it?
It was incredible. I read so many comics this week, and I wanted to pick a number 1, but I couldn't because my favorite thing that I read this week was this comic book.
You have to do you.
That's the thing.
You have to just keep it real.
We want to do some number ones for the people.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's a great point to jump on in, but sometimes it doesn't work that way.
So that's a priority, you know, but
mm-hmm.
the higher priority is staying 100% Curtis.
That's true. You're right. So in this week's issue, Power Man and Iron Fist have teamed up to retrieve a magical necklace for an old work buddy who just got out of prison.
Mm-hmm.
Turns out she's running a scam on these dudes, and they get it
on Power Man and Iron Fist.
On Power Man and Iron Fist, and they get embroiled in a bunch of stuff.
It seems like they seem so streetwise to
get
scammed.
They do. Well, this particular person
took advantage of their trust.
The family card. They've known each other. They've got an intense amount of history.
You can't say no to family.
They feel partially responsible for her incarceration, her long incarceration, and now she's out. But now everybody's after Power Man and Iron Fist. And so there's fighting, there's ass kicking. They fight a dude named Gorilla Man in this issue.
Oh, he's the coolest.
Is he a gorilla?
Kind of.
He's a dude in a gorilla suit.
Good enough.
It's so hilarious. And my dude, Iron Fist, keeps calling him Magilla Gorilla, and it is funny as shit.
Yeah. Can I talk about my favorite part of this book?
Yeah.
Can I hijack just a little bit?
Do it.
There's a scene where Power Man and Iron Fist are fighting Gorilla Man and Spider ripoff.
Black Tarantula.
Black Tarantula. Thank you. And Spider-Woman and Spider-Gwen are, like, watching from a perch.
Oh, yeah, they are.
And Spider-Woman's just, like, watching Power Man. She's like, get your shirt ripped off. Do it. Like, more of the shirt. Get more. And Spider-Gwen's like, should we help him out? She's like, let's just wait for the shirt. Let's see if the shirt comes off. It's fucking hysterical.
It's very hysterical.
It's the
best.
Super
well written.
It was some really cool commentary to see in the book. It was played really well, and it was very funny.
Agreed. I think this book's got the right amount of kung fu, humor, and it's just steeped in Marvel dorkery.
Oh, for sure.
There's like all these side characters and goofball, dumb villains that go all the way back through the whole history of these two characters. It's a blast. Sanford Green's art is the best.
It's really working. You were a little on the fence about Sanford Green at the beginning.
It's totally on the fence, and I was like trying to figure out where I'd seen this dude before.
Mm-hmm.
He did that Runaways book.
Oh.
With Noel Stevenson, that Civil War.
Yeah.
Or excuse me, Secret War Runaways book. And that was very good, too. So I'm 100% in on Power Man and Iron Fist. We're 2 issues in. They're available at your local comic shop, you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Do not sleep on this book. It's fantastic.
It's only 2 issues in.
It's only 2 issues in. And David Walker is a substantially good writer who I am dedicated to following. We talk about his Shaft comic all the time, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
And this is his second just home run book. Dialogue is great. I mean, these guys are like sitting eating breakfast for like 2 pages.
Yeah.
It rules.
I really
the dialogue.
I hope that the phrase fiddle faddle is here to stay.
Because
I'm in love with it. Power Man doesn't like to swear. He's trying to cut the swearing.
Yeah.
Because he's got a baby now.
Mm-hmm.
Who swears because of him.
Because of his tear. And historically, he's had a little bit of a mouth on him. And so now he's, you know, whenever things happen, he's like, oh, fiddle faddle.
We get a sweet Christmas in this issue.
We do get a sweet Christmas.
Oh, which was nice.
Yeah, it was really nice.
He can't take the family car because Jessica knows that him and Danny are going to, like, destroy the car, obviously.
Right.
Because they're going to fight, like, Gorilla Monsoon or whatever. But so they got to take, like, this little rinky-dink car. And my dog, Power Man, is, like, 100 feet tall and, like, weighs 400 pounds. So he's just crammed in this tiny little whip. It's super good.
It's the best.
So,
excellent.
That's enough about that. Read this comic. I just told you the whole comic. So I mean,
you got to nail that dynamic between those two dudes. If that doesn't work, then the whole book doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I haven't read the second one yet, but in the first one, it's like, okay, this dude gets it.
Yeah.
It just keeps rocking. This is what you want in a classic kind of buddy cop,
mm-hmm.
two dudes, straight man, funny guy combo.
Yep.
And they're just whooping ass. There's a scene when they're fighting, you know, the Gorilla Man and Black Tarantula. They're just kicking dudes through like light poles and cars and... It's the best.
Yeah, so it's great.
It sounds like the best. What else did you read that was
pick of the week.
Good or acceptable or dope?
I love Man Plus still, you guys. And by the third issue, this book is really getting it together.
Man Plus!
Yeah. It's really great, you guys. And I figured out how to say this guy's name. It's Andre Lima Arujo.
Oh. Is he a Man Plus?
He is a Man Plus. Yeah, he's doing the whole book. He's writing it and drawing it.
That's great.
So I would call that Man Plus. That's number three. There's only going to be four of these. It's a great cop drama, sci-fi cop drama thing, mm-hmm. Android, human AI thing. It's great. There's murder. There's shooting. Mm-hmm. There's cyborgs. Wonderful.
Outstanding.
Yeah, I also like.
I love saying the name of that book more than almost the name of any other book.
You love to say that.
Yep.
Archer and Armstrong, number one, the relaunch from Valiant,
mm-hmm.
was super funny. Yeah, it was a good time.
Jump-inable?
It is jump-inable, yeah. There's lots of stuff I didn't know, but I felt like cool with reading it.
The Valiant universe is very good, but very intricate, and there's a lot of ties now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's cool, and it's mm-hmm. worth the journey.
So I don't know much about that universe. I jumped in for Ninjak and stuff like that, but I read it, and I felt...
Just go right in.
Yeah, I felt pretty comfortable.
So, Marcus, can I say that maybe you're Archer?
You're not wrong.
Yeah.
Well, okay, so talk to us about Archer. What's
so
his deal?
So Archer is just like a laid-back kind of a dude, shirt open kind of a guy.
Uh-huh.
Definitely likes to get his booze on.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't always have a plan.
Never.
But he's got a lot of heart.
Okay.
Might fall through a table.
Mm-hmm.
Or a door.
Yes.
If you will. I think you see where I'm going with this.
I submit to you mm-hmm. that Marcus is more like Armstrong.
Please tell me why.
Because he's a very pure soul.
Uh-huh.
He was now this is not like Marcus, but he was raised in a cloistered kind of limited environment, and mm-hmm. as a result, mm-hmm. he tends to look at things from shall we say a little bit more, he looks at the world in a kind of an old-timey way. He likes to see things how they used to be.
You're not wrong. He he's coming from a position, if you will.
Absolutely. He's very pure of heart.
Nice.
I'm just so maybe.
That. Well, there you go.
I think that's what we really learned from this is that Marcus is the perfect man.
Oh, thanks, guys. I love this book. Getting back to the book and off me's. It was. I thought it was very fun and very approachable.
Sweet.
And sometimes Valiant Universe is not that way. Mm-hmm. Like, I read the first three or four issues of Ninjak and really liked it. Mm-hmm. But once they started to tie into other stuff, I got very lost.
It's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
It's a big old universe.
Archer and Armstrong was always kind of the easiest one to approach, though, because it's goofy first. It's like it's a comedy.
Absolutely.
Yep. And that's why I read this one, because I've read basically everything they've done since they've relaunched, except Archer and Armstrong.
Did you read the beginning of Archer and Armstrong?
I didn't.
No.
Yeah, and everybody's been like, oh, you like all this other stuff. You got to read it. So
it does that thing where there's like, they have to find all of the pieces of the thing that are scattered all over the world. They
That's
have to
your
find
shit.
The map to like find all of the stuff and like combine them and put the big. Oh, it's, oh god!
So
it's
unlike
so good.
The orphan trope,
that's
you love
that's
the
a trope I like.
Word. Well, some shit I'm trying to read that I have yet to read mm-hmm. is Spider Woman number 5. You guys, I read number. I'm caught up now.
You got caught up on Spider Woman.
I did.
I didn't know you did this.
Dog. Issue number 4. She makes a baby.
Yeah.
And the baby is born.
So hold on a second. So in Spider Woman, she's pregnant.
She's pregnant.
She goes off to a maternity ward in space.
In space.
And which is filled with aliens of a billion different species,
yes.
all like on the they're on the verge of giving birth. It's a hospital for everybody, but she's in the maternity ward.
Correct.
And they get invaded by Skrull.
Who are after a prince who's gone missing.
Exactly. And Spider-Woman, who is about to pop any minute, goes full diehard in this maternity ward.
And Captain Marvel is unavailable.
Yes.
So that's dope. There's some great phone calls, space phone calls between the two of them. But yeah, she goes full John McClane up in this biatch.
Yeah.
And just murders a ton of Skrulls.
I'm so glad you read it. One of the best books coming out right now.
Super on point. So I can't wait to read number 5 because the first 4 were just killer. There's a new book called Turncoat from Boom Studios. It's got writing from Alex Paknadel and Artyom Tekhanov.
Apologies to everyone.
Jeez.
everywhere all over the world.
So dig this, though. Alex did this book called Arcadia that we all really, really liked.
That's where I recognize that name.
And this dude Artyom did art for a book called Undertow from Image that didn't last very long but had very, very good art. So I'm excited to read this. And Monstrous number 4 from Image Comics this week, you guys. I'm in love with this book.
Mm-hmm.
It's magic. It's animal people. It's a weird, glorious ancient empire. I love it.
More like mediocre.
Woo!
You're not wrong, Nick.
He's not right.
That's it.
Either.
So those are your big picks.
Those
Thank
are my
you.
Big picks. That's some shit I'm trying to read.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, yeah.
Mr. Marcus.
Hello.
What is the level of your zipper at this point?
Well, I've lost the jacket.
Not the pants zipper, but let's be clear,
the
jacket
I've
zipper.
I've lost the jacket already.
Mm. Okay.
It's fully unzipped.
But now we're just unbuttoning
and
the
now
button
Now I'm
up.
It's so warm in here. I'm perspiring.
I find it very comfortable.
Yeah, well.
You know what'll cool you off?
When you look like this.
You know what'll cool you off?
What's that?
Tell me what your big picks
Ooh,
are.
My big pick is International Ironman that came out this week. International Ironman number one. Written by one of my favorite writers, maybe my favorite writer, Brian Michael Bendis.
I've never heard of him.
He's one of the major forces in the comic industry, especially at Marvel right now. He's written Iron Man before, but most people know him from his famed Avengers run and Daredevil run. Those are his two big books at Marvel.
I see.
But he has a literal mountain of work to stand on top of.
Oh, Brian Michael Bendis.
Yes, and the artist is Alex Maleev. And he's worked with Brian Michael Bendis before, most notably on Daredevil Volume 2. So that is the creative team for this book.
That's a dope creative
what
team.
What is going on that makes Iron Man International so very good? Because normally, I dislike Iron Man very much. He is the opposite of what I am looking for in a superhero. The superheroes I enjoy are pure of heart. Iron Man is very selfish, normally. But this is a flashback sequence to...
You know, he's still, like, he puts his work in. He saves a lot of people. He's saved the whole Earth a few times.
When you're the yin and yang of Steve Rogers, I can't love you as much.
I'm just saying, give Tony Stark a little bit of a break.
He's done some stuff, I guess. But this is a flashback sequence. Tony is estranged from his father. They're not communicating. So Tony goes to London, or England, to study abroad.
Yes.
There, we get to see a little bit of, like, awkward science-y Tony, maybe the Tony that doesn't have the confidence that we're used to seeing, and ends up falling for a girl. This girl has a strange past that is linked to Tony in some way, and we're trying to figure out, Tony Stark, the big plot surprise for this book that we know beforehand.
Does the potential reader know what this?
I think so. This
is
like this is what like the book was launched on from the last Iron Man run.
Mm-hmm.
Is that Tony Stark doesn't know who his parents are?
Oh, okay.
He doesn't know who his actual biological parents are, so he's trying to find out.
He's a little orphan boy.
He's not. We don't know yet.
Okay.
But this flashback sequence is kind of the start of this journey of Tony trying to figure out who his actual parents are.
Yeah.
But the art is beautiful. This flashback sequence of like college Tony Stark is really interesting to me. It's a Tony Stark we haven't seen a lot of. And I thought it was just wonderfully written, and the art is beautiful.
I'll agree with you, Marcus.
I'm going to continue with it. This version of Tony is miles more interesting for me. That's my pick of the week.
Well, can we say before we move on really quick, despite its creative team, I was wholly uninterested in this book before I read it.
How come?
I don't want another Iron Man book in my life, or so I thought.
Yeah.
I like this thing. It's like Superman Alien, this book reminded me of. It's a younger Tony. It's a cool Tony. He's not whipping around in the suit.
Yeah.
He's not in the mansion yet. It's way more interesting.
Yeah,
it's,
I agree.
How old is he in this book? 22?
If that, yeah. Maybe.
You know? He doesn't want to hang out at parties.
This is unexplored territory for... I can't think of anything
else.
Deals with young Tony Stark.
Yeah, we're
like
used to the Tony who like rolls into the party, drives up in the Ferrari, he's the center of attention. This Tony Stark wants nothing to do with parties. He wants to like work on his work and try to talk to this girl.
That is a cool take.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yep.
Other stuff I loved this week, Rat Queens number 15 came out. This book is in a little bit of a lull right now because it can't seem to stick with an artist.
Struggling.
But that being said, the story's great.
Mm-hmm.
And that's enough for me. Jim Henson's Storyteller Dragon number 4 came out this week. That series as a whole is very wonderful. And then I read a book called Three Devils, number 1.
Oh, how was that?
It was very good.
Nice.
I liked it.
Tell me about it.
It was very good. It is about a young Romani girl who witnesses her family being killed by someone she claims is the devil.
Oh, no.
In just post-slavery United States.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up being found by a gentleman who was a slave and is no longer, and he's traveling as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's their adventures together, kind of both being of groups of people that are not viewed very well by the common populace.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a little bit of magic. There's a little bit of folklore in it.
Postbellum America.
Yeah.
Right there.
Okay.
And
I thought it was very interesting. I, as you know, I've talked about it before, I like the colonial Civil War era mystery folklore horror stuff, and this is all kind of tied into that.
I like that.
What I am worried about is the slave no more has some magic powers, and it's good now, but in a couple twists, it could be very not cool. So I like this book. I'm going to continue to read it, but I am getting this inkling that something is going on here that may not be cool. But yeah, that's kind of cryptic, and I apologize.
Well, I'm intrigued. I'm going to read this.
Yeah, I didn't.
Three Devils.
Yeah. In my cover of the week, I just want to point out Lords of the Jungle number one came out from Dynamite.
Yes.
It's about Tarzan and Sheena. And Alex Ross did a cover for it that is just needs to go on the side of a van.
Let me see it.
So badly. Like, if this doesn't get put on the side of a van somewhere, it's a injustice to humanity as a whole.
Describe it to me.
Tarzan and Sheena are in a vine-covered jungle. They're crouched. Tarzan...
They just climbed a tree.
...covered in all of his masculine glory. Sheena leaning on him in a leopard print bikini, but done tastefully.
You know what's not sexy?
What?
Climbing up a tree.
Yeah, never.
So, like, they're looking good in that picture,
but they've
there's no way to sexily climb up a tree.
But Alex Ross...
tree climbing noises.
This isn't his normal style, for sure. He's definitely hearkening back to an earlier age in comics. But it's great. I love old Tarzan comics. They're kind of with the Prince Valiant thing for me.
Yeah.
So I was very excited to
Tarzan
see
Tarzan looks freshly greased.
You know who's crazy juice?
Sheena's hair, like, she just got out of the salon.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, they're way coiffed. Yeah.
I think they're just both super sweaty from climbing that tree.
Maybe.
You know who's super juiced for this comic is Charlie out in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
really?
Manager of the store. Mm-hmm. We were way back when we were ordering comics for this month.
Yeah.
Charlie's like, I'm kind of really psyched for Lord of the Jungle.
It was good.
Like,
I'm so glad you mentioned Charlie because she's going to be on the podcast next week.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
Cool.
I hope if all goes accordion to plan.
That's great.
I certainly hope it does. She's awesome.
You guys, I have a big pick too.
Oh, what? Nick, would you like to share with us your hardcover?
I would. What do you mean by that?
I would just say that.
Are you implying something?
Yeah. Ew. Over the last couple months, maybe we've started to see a trend from you.
Well, I just think that it's a pretty broad industry, so I just think that it should be represented on our podcast.
Yeah.
Other than just like another superhero.
Yeah.
Book.
Go on and tell us about your graphic novel that likely will be incorporated into a college syllabus.
Please.
I would love to. The Imitation Game by Jim Ottaviani and Leland Purvis.
What?
I'm not actually going to talk a ton about this because I'm calling Jim Ottaviani out.
Oh, do it.
Right now.
Oh, yeah.
Jim Ottaviani.
Do it.
Come on this podcast and talk to me about this book.
Oh, wow.
And that's how I want to talk about The Imitation Game.
I thought you were going to call him out like, Jim, come this?
I want to fight you.
Yeah.
No, I don't want to fight you at all. I think you're awesome, and I want to talk about your book with you. And Jim's a local dude.
Yeah.
Based out of Ann Arbor.
Yep.
He hangs out at Vault of Midnight sometimes. And it's
he
really cool.
Does.
And he does.
He's really cool and smart.
Jim Ottaviani is a Zarek Award winner. He's an Ignatz and Eisner Award nominee. He's the writer of Feynman, which was a New York Times number one bestseller. You guys, for real.
That's great.
T-minus, The Race to the Moon. He also did Primates. He does a lot of other books focused on science and scientists, and he's very good at it. Jim is a librarian at the University of Michigan, and he worked as a nuclear engineer for some time. He's just one of the coolest dudes. He's one of my favorite writers in comics, and I really would like to talk to him about this book in depth.
Yeah, that would be so cool to have him. We could talk about all his cool works. Yeah.
I love Primates. It's a great book.
Dude, just across the board. Have you ever read T-minus, The Race to the Moon?
No, but I love space, so I would probably love it.
You would adore this book. Mm-hmm. It's it just goes back and forth between America and the USSR as they're like building their technology and all the false starts and projects to, oh, man.
But America wins at the end, right? That's the important lesson.
I'm not going to spoil
That's the important lesson, right? America wins.
I won't do it. Leland Purvis is also a Zarek Award winner. Hey, Curtis.
Yeah.
Are you comfortable telling me what a Zarek Award is?
I am, briefly. So the Zarek Award is a foundation that gives people grants to publish comic books. So,
yes.
You know, you have your comic, you usually have it done, and you submit to the Zarek Foundation, and they approve, you know, X number of grants per year.
Yes.
So it's like 20 grants a year, 10 grants a year.
Yeah, defunct now.
It is. It recently defunct. Mm-hmm. So that's sad, but so many cool things came through the Zurich Foundation, and it looks like it was co-founded by Peter Laird, which I did not know of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles fame.
Yeah, the whole idea is like you give people enough money to make their own comics.
Yep.
And there's some pretty amazing creators who have been on the receiving end of this award. And it's a bummer that it's not around anymore.
Yeah.
And this is the kind of thing, you know, it's like crowdfunding kind of these days is a, like sort of, I guess, maybe a version of this kind of stuff mm-hmm. where the last barrier of entry, money, is not going to decide ultimately whether your thing gets made or not.
Yes.
If you have a thing and it's cool and you know, if yep. money is the thing that's closing that final door, that yeah. stinks.
Right.
Nobody likes that. So, yeah, there's so many cool Zurich books that exist, and I wish they were still around.
Yeah, look at some of the names that have won. Gene Yang, Jason Shiga, Farrell Dalrymple, Jeff
wow.
Lemire, yeah. Sonny Liu, just...
Adrian Tomine,
Jason
Tom Hart.
Just on and on and on.
James Sturm.
Yeah, Ben Costa won a few years ago.
Holy
you remember that?
Crap, yes.
Anyway, it's a really cool award.
Well, good on you, Zurich.
Jim Ottaviani and Leland Purvis worked together on a book called Suspended in Language, which was about Niels Bohr, another book about a scientist. Anyway, it's fantastic. It's focused on Alan Turing, who it's called The Imitation Game. There's a movie
yeah.
also called The Imitation Game.
I want to watch
that
movie.
It was a really good movie. And Alan Turing is the mathematician. He cracked the Enigma Code, the German Enigma Code in World War II. But this is it's just a biography of him. It's just a look at his life. And in classic Jim Ottaviani fashion, it's stuffed with like mathematical formulas and the steps of logic that he took to like create the work
yeah.
that he did. And Jim is not afraid to get into the meat of the very complicated things happening, but broken down in a way that's really approachable and that you can, on some level, try to follow what Alan Turing was up to.
You have a little crush on Jim Ottaviani, don't you?
Who wouldn't?
I don't blame you.
He's very, very good.
He is.
So yeah, that's The Imitation Game. It was published by Abrams, and it's out today.
This guy has such a fascinating story, Alan Turing.
Oh, yeah.
And I just recently know more of it. I mean, I knew the Enigma Code thing, but his life is just totally fascinating.
Yeah.
The opening of this book, and I read maybe the first 50 pages so far, I really liked the running chess.
Oh, yeah. So, Alan, this is like in the very beginning of the book. He had this thing where two people would play chess in the backyard, and you took a move, and then you'd run around the whole house.
Mm-hmm.
And in the time that you were running around the house, your opponent, that was his time to make his next move. So you could only think about your move for as long as the other person was running.
Sprinted.
So if you wanted to jog around the house, or you can sprint and try to force him to make his move a little bit faster. I loved it.
It was really neat.
It's so good. This is a game Alan Turing used to play when he was a young man. And I learned that in The Imitation Game by Jim Ottaviani and Leland Purvis.
Cool.
What else you read this week, Nick, that you dug?
Well, I'm really looking for... I didn't read a lot else, to be honest with you. I got sucked into the Comics Code of Authority in a big way.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm really looking forward to that Spider-Woman book. Oh, Lord. In such a big way.
Cool.
That's probably what I'm most excited about.
Nice.
Also, this new manga called Mysterious Girlfriend X.
Tell me more.
Best name of anything all
yeah,
week.
Yeah, really good.
I haven't read it, but on the back, the tagline is, "The Ultimate Mystery, a Girlfriend."
It's like Nick's high school all over again.
Yeah, not much changes.
Well, that was a burn.
Well,
no.
That was a burn.
No.
That was
a shitty burn. I'm sorry.
No, it was okay.
We're here to build each other up, not put each other down.
We're here. It's okay. We did little bit of both is okay.
All right, fair enough.
Anyway, those are that's what's up with me in comics this week. I'm really looking forward to reading more comics,
yeah.
to be honest with you.
Nick, did you have a cover of the week, my dude, at all?
My cover of the week was probably Low.
Me too.
If I remember.
Low number 12 by Greg Toccini
yeah.
was my favorite cover of the week, too. We agree all the time, me and Nick.
I know you do.
So lame.
Marcus hates it. Those are our big picks.
No,
Power Face and Iron Man, number 2 was Curtis's pick. Marcus, your pick was International Iron Man, number 1. And mine was The Imitation Game.
Nice.
Brand new graphic novel.
Those were, in fact, our big picks.
That was all of it. Do you guys want to dip into the taser?
I do.
I want to point the taser for sure.
What do you want to point the taser at?
The censorship of our great industry.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Fascinating.
So interesting.
The Comics Code of Authority.
Yeah.
What is the Comics Code of Authority?
Young Marcus.
Yeah, so I'd like to set the scene.
Please.
If I may.
Please.
It's the late 40s, early 50s.
Mm-hmm.
America has come home from a long and arduous war.
Mm-hmm.
The sky is gray.
The sky is gray. Light rain falls over the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And people are starting to get into comics in a pretty big way. Comics are huge.
We're in boom time.
We're in boom time for comic books.
Yes.
They're everywhere. They're
selling millions of copies.
They're on every newsstand, and there are comics for genres that, dare I say, even today, we have yet to fully get back to.
We've never seen a time like in comics. We've never seen a time like this.
Yeah,
since.
Never. Ever. Yeah. Comics are everywhere, and people have some money, so they're buying them.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1948, the comic industry comes together and creates the Association of Comic Magazine Publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is an organization that essentially is like, hey, we're making a ton of money. Some people are starting to criticize the industry. We should probably come together and do a thing. And form
like a self-regulating body.
I mean, at this point, they're just trying to like have a organization for the industry.
I see.
Like, you know, things are developing and things are happening, and we should probably have a group of people who can talk about it. And it's a lot of the big wigs of the time and a lawyer from New York City,
mm-hmm.
and they're the ones who kind of get together. So in 1954, the organization changes its name to the Association of Comic Magazine Publishers.
Mm-hmm.
And this is due, there's a government hearing, and they say, like, hey, you need to start regulating yourself.
Yeah, and we're going to get into that.
And we're going to get
it's
into
really
that.
Interesting.
And so they create it. But the question is like, what's happening at this particular time?
Yes.
So two articles come out in the late 40s, one called Horror in the Nursery by Judith Chris, and another one called The Comics, very funny, by Frederick Wortham. And we're going to get into him in intense detail. Mm-hmm.
Can I just say Horror in the Nursery is like a story that I want to read.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That sounds so cool.
Yeah.
And these
it's a really good band
articles
name.
Are starting to get a lot of attention. Judith Chris is like a famed movie critic at the mm-hmm. time, film critic. So she has a pretty big audience.
Mm-hmm.
And because of these articles, we start to see some comic book burns taking place. And especially Catholic dioceses start to really pick this up as an activity.
So this is all over the country.
This is all over the country. But and Nick, you really went down the rabbit hole on like what is happening in the 50s that's spawning these articles.
So there's this concern in the 50s about juvenile delinquency. And
yes.
What is actually going on? I don't know. I did with this. We look at comic books and we kind of focused on this from the comic book side. But there's this huge concern that there's something going on with the youth.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about it, like you said, Marcus, this is the end of World War II. People have seen some horrible shit.
Yeah.
You know, people are trying to figure out how to like get back to their daily lives. And there are kids out there that people, you know, fathers are meeting kids for the first time, just kind of coming back from this war. And so there's something going on culturally. We kind of think of the 50s as this really idyllic, you know, this is what you think of when you think of like classic Americana. You think of this point in history.
Sure.
Yeah.
But there's an underside to it of that we just got done with, you know, the most horrible war that the world had ever seen. So there are some concerns about how this is affecting kids, and comic books are one of the many, many scapegoats that people are trying to point to try to figure out what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
It's really easy to think of comic books getting blamed for everything, but in fact, the focus was on a lot of different stuff,
sure.
which we'll talk about a little bit later. But Frederick Wortham did spend a lot of time focusing on comic books.
He is kind of the main he's the main vocalist against comic books and their influence on youth.
Well, he wrote a very popular book called Seduction of the Innocent.
Great name.
And he was also appointed as the psychiatrist consultant for the subcommittee hearing that spawned a lot of this the movement towards the Comics Code Authority. So Frederick Wortham he's this German-American psychiatrist who focused on the effects of mass media and comic books in particular on children. He's the most hated man in the comic book industry.
True.
When the industry was at the biggest crest of the biggest wave that it ever had.
Yeah.
Just despised. And it would be really easy to paint Wortham with a really broad brush here and just say like, oh, he's just a prude. This is just like Puritan nonsense. But that's just not true. Like the guy actually was a really respected, really, you know, intelligent dude in his field.
Sure.
Right? He was genuinely concerned about children and poor city children specifically.
Well, I always came at it from like a totally different angle, too. I always thought he was trying to capitalize. He was trying to sell his books.
Right.
You know, that was always my thought personally, you know, in looking into this. That also seems to not totally be the case.
And that's not to say that his approach wasn't kind of like weird and wrongheaded in a lot of different ways. But I don't think you can chalk it up to prudery or greed.
Yeah.
I don't know that that's fair to say. He just had a really strange way of attacking the problem, but you can see in his roots of his studies like how he got there. So he's actually like a left-leaning dude. He's of Jewish origins. He probably actually had a lot of the same politics and views as the publishers that he was like trying to defame and destroy.
Yep, absolutely.
If you took them side by side. He's a well-to-do dude. He's literate. He's educated. He's born in 1895. And World War I made him obsessed with violence and the causes of violence. This becomes the big thrust of his career. Like, how do we get down to what makes people violent as children, and how do we get rid of it?
Yep. So, which is a laudable cause. I mean,
absolutely.
You know, so in theory, that's like great.
Yeah, it's just weird to put ourselves in the headspace of what this is. World War I, and then, you know, 20 some years later, we're right into World War II. Like,
right.
People are obsessed with this crazy shit that the whole world has just seen.
And it's all horrible. I mean, World War I is just trench warfare and mustard gas. So
everybody's grappling with it.
Yeah.
Right. So he's actually an expert in the brain and it's like the physiological basis and behavior, but his focus switches over to like the cultural causes of mental illness, and that's pop culture, music, television, and comic books. So his view of art is really affected by about his European origins, which it, you know, there are concepts of like high art, right? And individually produced pieces of art.
I see.
Versus comic books, which are very much not individually produced. They are mass produced.
Machine made.
Right. Mm-hmm. So they're mechanically produced, and therefore he looked at like the mechanical consequences of the people that consumed that stuff. Like, it must be more simple because it's mechanically made, so the effect on people must be more simple. This is like at the root of
right.
what Wortham thought. Whereas like high art, quote unquote high art, that elicits a lot of complicated emotions that like the more intelligent mind can like work through.
Right.
Because he also had this really, he believed that the masses are more susceptible to this stuff than literate, educated classes, which is actually a super common thing amongst like the left wing at this point.
Right.
But in the comic publishers also, like, they said a lot of the same stuff. They treated the masses like idiots.
True.
They actually, if you look side by side, these dudes are so, Frederick Wortham and all of these dudes, they say the same stuff and just come to completely different conclusions. But Wortham, there's this quote where he says, "I began to notice that every delinquent child I treated was a reader of these so-called comic books." This is in 1940.
Oh, yeah.
But the trick is that, like, and lots of people have pointed this out. At this point in 1940, 90% of children were reading comics.
Yeah.
We would have been rich.
Oh, we'd be so rich.
We'd be so rich.
Oh, my God.
Well, and, you know, for me, this thing here, and this guy seems like such a smart dude, but, like, causality and, like, coincidence are just, we just know that that's not the truth.
Yeah.
If every time the sun goes down, you know, you got to itch your elbow, that doesn't, the two aren't linked because they happen.
Yeah.
Together.
And again, it's so easy to just like just wipe, you know, brush this dude off.
Yeah.
Brush him aside, right? And he has this stuff where he talks about like Superman is a Nazi.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? He has this thing about like the S is like it might as well be an SS, and he's like the Uberman, and that how it ties into all of this. But this stuff is created by Jewish creators who like spent a lot of time and money trying to contribute to Jewish causes. Jack Kirby fought in World War II.
Right.
You know, that's a stupid thing to say. But at the heart of it, what he's saying is like in a time when there's violence all over the world, maybe there's an argument to be made that having a giant white dude punch all of his problems is not the most productive thing in the world for kids to be reading.
Right.
That's not what Wortham said. Wortham just said he was a Nazi.
Yep.
But he's getting at something that I think is really interesting. Sorry, I'm going on and on, but Marcus, talk to me about the Seduction of the Innocent.
Yeah, so the book comes out in 1954, and it's important to note, like, this is a minor bestseller in the United States. This book is getting circulated throughout the populace. And it was so popular, it kind of caused this U.S. congressional inquiry on the effects of comic books in the American youth. And the general idea is that the publication of these images of violence, drug use, sex, other adult activities via comic books would encourage...
Doing taxes.
Yeah. would encourage kids who read them to do similar acts.
Yeah.
And a big part of this is he looked at comics as supporting some form of like gay agenda. And this was mostly documented in Robin being Batman's young gay partner.
Good boy.
And Wonder Woman being a lesbian due to her strength and aesthetic. And there were also some things going on with Wonder Woman depicting scenes of bondage, which are completely founded.
Actually, that's totally true.
Totally true.
So, yeah. Well, I would like to interject that I just watched this great documentary on Wonder Woman, and Trina Robbins makes this great point about how the bondage thing is, from her perspective as a woman, was about a woman breaking her own chains, and it was super crucial. And I don't want to, you know, derail this whole conversation, but I thought it was a very, very interesting take on this kind of bondage aspect that we associate with Wonder Woman through the eyes of Trina Robbins, who's like this very prominent kind of historian, comics creator. And she's a woman, so I, you know, as a dude, you know.
That's exactly how Marston framed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But she talked about her experience directly reading these comics as a young girl and how these kind of things of bondage, we look at it now and we put these things on it, but not one time as an 8-year-old girl did bondage, or even a 13-year-old girl, did bondage ever enter into it. She was always fascinated with Wonder Woman being her own rescuer. And that's the way she came at it as a young lady reading these
comics.
I thought it was very interesting.
Marston actually was and wrote a lot about bondage. He was super into bondage.
Sure. Yeah. But what I'm getting at is, like, you know, as adults, we can put these things on these things that maybe an 8-year-old or a 13-year-old, whatever, kid is just not. Their head is not there.
Okay,
you know
I don't want to get too.
So sorry, I derailed
the whole
thing.
But it's important to note that like the idea of Batman and Robin having a homosexual link was pretty common at the time. There were papers being published about this, and it was a big focal point for the book. Nick had already commented there was this big thing about Superman being un-American and being a fascist. And the book is really a huge push into this movement about comics and how they influence. It is important to note that later on, it is proven that the book uses somewhat of a poor sample for its study. It already used children that were in the juvenile system already as its study base and had pre-existing documentation showing behavior problems. So that was later brought out in the book, lost some of its credibility then. But it is so important to note that like these general themes about like a homosexual agenda and violence and drug use, this book was not just like in the fringe of academia. It was on bookstands. It was being purchased.
Yes,
totally.
So the big outcome of it is that the Senate Judiciary Committee has a subcommittee on juvenile delinquency. And Nick, you really went into this as well.
And this is a kind of a, this is, again, a larger thing. And comics were actually a very small part of it, I learned. From what I've always read about it, because I'm always coming at it from a comic book perspective,
yep.
I thought
yep.
the whole thing was about comic
Me
books.
Me too.
It was a couple days.
Yeah.
It was really focused on narcotics and social agencies and parenting styles.
Got it.
And then the cultural stuff was really focused more on television than it was on comic books. Mm. But it was a big deal for the comic book industry. There's no doubt about it.
Right.
But that wasn't kind of like the focus of the whole hearing. And Wortham is called as an expert on juvenile delinquents. He's like he's treated as the dude who's there to provide medical, you know, context for what's going on. So they're not exactly coming into it with an unbiased look because they hired Wortham right off the bat. They also called in comic book publishers and advertisers just to try to get to the root of like what's going on in comics. And most publishers had no fucking idea what was going on with their, because they didn't read them.
Oh, of course not.
They didn't have the first clue about, and when, you know, put up on the stand, it was kind of a shit show.
Yeah.
And also a lot of them didn't show up because they were terrified of what the limelight was going to do to their brands.
Oh,
and,
I see.
But the exception was William Gaines, who was the publisher of EC Comics.
Such a cool dude.
And we have to do a taser
on
Bill Gaines.
He's
the
coolest.
That dude is amazing.
Yeah.
But this is like Tales from the Crypt, Mad Magazine, hit me with some other EC titles.
Oh, Vault of Horror.
Yes.
Psychoanalysis, which...
came later as a result of this.
Oh, that's right. That's a new direction title. Sorry, that is later. But what else did they do? They did...
just on and on.
What's their war comic that was so good? I'm blanking on it completely, but it's a Two-Fisted Tales. Is that them?
Yeah, that's exactly Two-Fisted it. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, it's
yeah.
the best.
Yeah,
so
this so is like Public Enemy number one, essentially, yeah. for comic books. And yep. William Gaines goes in there and is ready to go toe-to-toe with these dudes.
Yeah. No, he's an incredibly smart dude.
Yep.
Yeah, I love it.
Well, yep. It didn't go exactly as he planned, and at the end... He was not able to kind of, he thought he was going to like just walk in there and turn the whole place upside down and give everybody a middle finger. But, you know, in the end, he was not able to make the as effective a case as he wanted to.
Sure.
I also thought it was interesting. The National Cartoonist Society was present. Walt Kelly, who did Pogo.
Yeah.
And Milton Caniff or Caniff, who did Terry and the Pirates.
Yeah.
Among others. And they basically just distanced themselves from comic books. And generally condemned comic books.
Because like, they were quote-unquote cartoonist?
Yeah, it was really interesting. I didn't like read any of the transcripts, but it was like they did not go to bat for comic books.
Betrayal.
It was a betrayal.
It was a huge betrayal. And we've seen this like, you know, throughout reading about all kinds of stuff involving comic books. When we did the taser on Dan Klaus last week, I mean, comic book creators as like these low-brow, scummy, nobody, you know, you wouldn't admit to anyone that you drew comic books for, yeah. I mean, even now almost.
Yeah. So the result of the hearings is the committee recommends, and a committee recommendation out of the Senate is like a big deal.
It's like, do it.
It's yeah, exactly.
It's not a recommendation.
So their recommendation is self-policing by the comic book publishers in order to avoid censure and other legal action.
Wow.
To, quote, prevent our nation's young from being harmed from crime and horror comic books.
It's a good choice.
Yep. And so... thus, the Comics Code of Authority.
Wow.
So, Curtis, what is that exactly?
Well, so, you know, I guess it's a set of moral guidelines essentially created as a self-policing code of ethics and standards for the entire industry.
Mm-hmm.
So this stamp, all your comics would have to be sent to the Comics Code
mm-hmm.
and they would for review, and they would be deemed worthy or unworthy, and they would receive the stamp. This little nice.
If they were approved,
they would receive the Comics Code Authority stamp. It would go on the cover, and then that book would be essentially allowed to be distributed.
Mm-hmm.
Books without that stamp would not go through distribution.
Mm-hmm.
So it essentially, you played ball or you sold no comics.
Hit me
so
with
it's
some.
Pretty wild.
So the Code of Authority has a bunch of different points.
Yes.
What are some of your favorites?
Well, the rules. I implore people to, you know, we can link to this in the show notes. Just look up this code from 1954. It's a list of so many crazy, awesome things. Here's some good ones, though. We won't go through the whole list, but I love ones such as all lurid, unsavory, and gruesome illustrations shall be eliminated. That's my favorite thing about statements like this, and this thing is rife with them, is that you could just interpret that in so many ways. No comic magazine shall use the words horror or terror in its title. Love that.
Yeah.
I love stuff like this line. This is one bullet point from the code. Seduction and rape shall never be shown or suggested. I like that seduction and rape are in the same line.
Absolutely. Divorce was specifically prohibited from seeming alluring.
Yes.
Yeah. My favorite, policemen, judges, government officials, and respected institutions shall never be presented in such a way as to create disrespect for established authority.
Oh, that is a banger.
Criminals should not be presented so as to be rendered glamorous or to occupy a position which creates a desire for emulation.
Wow. How do you do that?
Oh.
How do you be responsible for that?
Yeah.
Scenes dealing with instruments associated with Walking Dead, torture, vampires, and vampirism, ghouls, cannibals, and werewolfism are prohibited.
Absolutely.
Oh, nice.
So no horror comic ever.
Yeah.
So you can see with a lot of this stuff, once you start talking about morality and start talking about how characters are presented,
mm-hmm.
you lose a lot, necessarily, you lose a lot of subtlety.
Yeah.
So this is like, I didn't think about this when I was doing the research, so this is off the top of my dome here, so bear with me. But this, like, put handcuffs on the ability to create nuanced comics.
Oh, yes.
Probably for 20 years.
You know, in looking at the Silver Age, you can see, like, right. I can see why everything was, like, four colors in every way.
Yes.
Yes.
Wait, what do you mean by that, four colors?
Just no nuance. Everything is just bow, bam, boom. Everything's one issue. Everything's goofy and light.
Because what can get by...
Mm-hmm.
This is not an original thought that I'm having. Lots of people have written about
Absolutely.
This, but it just really hammers home that like if you can't present a criminal in a way that he can be sympathetic in any way, then that means there's one type of way to write about criminals. So you're either not going to write about criminals at all,
yeah,
or you're going to,
yeah,
write about them in the most boring way possible.
And every time it's the same, no matter who you are,
yes,
what creator you are. Yeah.
So
it's very weird.
This is 1954 and really ran until 2010.
Which is crazy.
Yeah.
And a lot of books were kind of like felt the ramifications of this. So by 1954, comics are not doing well.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
By the time this stuff is going on, like, comics are starting to have like a really hard time. Television is on the rise.
Yep.
Paperback books are on the rise. The supermarket appeared. I thought this was really interesting. So it's edging out these like small candy shops and newsstands.
Yeah.
And this is like critical to comic book distribution. Supermarkets,
sure,
are edging them out, and supermarkets won't carry comics because the profit margin's too low.
Oh.
So Seduction of the Innocent and the Senate hearings pretty much are the last nail in the coffin of the golden age of comic books in a lot of ways.
Wow.
So there's a great book by Gerard Jones called The Men of Tomorrow. Which a lot of my research came from for this, and he has this great quote that comics, quote, had a stink about them like never before. They'd always been junk reading, but now they were depraved junk reading.
Wow. Mm.
And that's pretty much, at that point, there's not much more you can do. Citizen groups are pressuring retailers to return comic books like crazy. Legislation's popping up in cities and states all over the country. And that's pretty much the end. Most companies are like practically unaffected by the code since the rules were based on ones that they were kind of already using in-house.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
But William Gaines and EC, for instance, they totally struggled.
The comic publisher EC Comics.
Yeah, what are they?
Entertaining comic.
Yeah, what did they ended up doing with the comic book Mad?
Oh, Mad Magazine was their one book that kind of survived, and they changed it to a magazine format, mm-hmm, to avoid having to submit to the Comics Code Authority. There's a few later books. My favorite of all time, Conan, the, mm-hmm, Savage Sword of Conan. Marvel did that same thing. They went magazine size so they could, you know, do mature content.
And they tried. EC tried. They came up with a new line to try to conform with some of these new codes. What was that about?
They created a whole new line called New Direction. Mm-hmm. I love how it's just so straightforward.
Yep.
A New Direction, which is awesome. But none of these comics lasted for more than 4 or 5 issues. Psychoanalysis, we mentioned earlier, is a comic literally about a psychiatrist. He's an unnamed, he's just called the psychiatrist in this comic. And he treats people, they lay on the couch like you would,
mm-hmm,
and they talk about, you know, their childhood and their parents. And one of them gets cured. It only goes 4 issues, but there's a few other strange ones. MD, which is about doctors.
Yeah.
An incredible science fiction, which is just a great title. But none of these books made it, and they all died a couple issues in.
And all of the other books, like, they had crime in the title. Like, they just had no chance.
There was a book literally just called Crime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crime Stories.
Yeah.
So by 1956, the industry is half of what it was 5 years before, and creators are just fleeing. Like, writers, you can't find writers and artists. They're just like, the industry's not sustainable anymore. The American News Company, which is like the big monopoly distributor of comics, it liquidates. And that was that. Half of all publishers don't have a way to get their comics out
right
at this point.
Wow.
The CCA is not the direct cause of the comics collapse of the mid-50s. I can't stress that enough. But it was a symptom of larger shit that was happening in the culture. And it's definitely a part of the story that led to the end of this crazy era in comics.
Sure. Yeah. And I think the takeaway also for this is it lingers even today. The stink, if you will,
yes,
is still hard to get out of the minds of many folks.
And I think maybe, like, what does that industry look like if it could continue unimpeded by this in terms of quality?
Mm-hmm.
Because the other argument that you hear about comics all the time is that they're for kids and that they're terrible.
Right.
True.
And for a while, they were terrible because you've got these handcuffs on.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely. And anytime you burn stuff, when you have public burning of anything, like, how many hundreds of years does it take to come back from public burnings?
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, disco, for example, they burned all those records, and it's just now, only now, starting to be like, oh, I like disco. It's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the code makes some changes throughout time. It gets updated in the 80s. mm-hmm. and loses even more steam. It starts to really pitter-patter out in the 70s. They update it in the 80s. It starts to lose a little bit of its credibility.
What was the Green Arrow, Green Lantern book?
Yeah, there's one where Speedy, Green Arrow's famed sidekick, is caught doing heroin.
True.
And they didn't submit it for CGC approval, or they did, and CGC said there's no way.
And they just put it out.
And they just put it out, and nothing happened. There was no, if you didn't do this, then nothing happened. And Stan Lee ran a thing with Spider-Man about Spider-Man and drug use. Mm-hmm. Again, didn't get CGC approval.
No, CCA.
CCA, sorry, thank you.
Wait, true.
Once again, nothing happened.
Yep.
So then it loses all steam because comic publishers are just ignoring it.
Yep.
I love the fact the last book to still put the stamp on their comic book was Archie Comics.
Yep.
And they had been doing it for years without submitting their books at all.
They just put it on there.
They're like, yeah, it's fine. Just throw it on.
Nobody's checking.
No one's checking anymore.
Yep.
And I love that. Yeah.
Yeah. Underground Comics in the 1960s, Comics with an X, they obviously did not submit to the CCA.
Yep.
Imagine that.
That was probably a lot because of a lot of hand distribution, self-distribution.
Head shop distribution.
Yeah. There you go. Yep. I like that Dell and Gold Key never had comic stamps on them.
Yeah.
Comic Code Authority stamps. I did not know that.
They just skipped it.
Yeah, and now that I remember looking back, yes, I've never seen that stamp on one of those books.
Yeah, that actually was a big contributor to that to American news companies going out of business.
Oh, wow.
Because they couldn't distribute their books. They didn't have the Comics Code of Authority.
There we go.
That's a whole other thing, the American news company. Oh, boy. Marvel abandoned the seal placement in 2001. They just stopped putting it on the books. DC didn't do it until 2010, interestingly
enough. That's so crazy to me.
And then, as Marcus said, yeah, Archie Comics was the last holdout.
It's like, yeah, we'll just throw it on. It looks nice.
Just throw it on there, but they stopped putting it on in 2011, and that was that. The CCA seal no longer existed. And my favorite part of this story is that the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund, which is a book about comic book censorship, not a book, but an organization founded on protecting creator rights and
the
freedom
First
of speech
Amendment.
in comic books. They acquired the intellectual property rights to the CCA seal, and they own it.
That
now
is so dope.
I love it. And they use it for their own marketing and awareness purposes.
It completely rules. Yeah, that it's being reappropriated all these many years later. Because it did, it didn't maybe kill the industry as much as, I've thought for many years. But man, it's ramifications. Its tentacles
and there's
are thorough.
There's still some hate. Like when I price back issues, I can always tell if I have priced the back issue in the store, because if the seal's on there, I always put the sticker, my price sticker, over the seal, and it's just something that like I didn't realize I was doing it. But yeah, it's a little bit of like fuck you. I don't So it still angers me a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I get my little jab in there every once in a while whenever I get a price a back issue with it on there, because it's just, it's part of a larger, it's a huge part of the already large story of comic books in North America. And it still has, for some of us, there's a bitter taste there.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. No, you want people to be smarter than that. And anytime things are burned, my hackles.
That's a red flag.
My hackles are raised.
Yep.
Don't do that.
Don't burn stuff.
Crazy mob mentality.
Yeah, please. Thank you. Anyway, special thanks to Men of Tomorrow by Gerard Jones.
I gotta read that book.
Please, everybody should read that book. Oh, man, it's so good.
Cool.
Listener, read that book. Men of Tomorrow by Gerard Jones. A lot of the stuff we talked about today came out of there.
Yeah.
That is it for us today, gentlemen. It was a sexy pleasure to be in here with you.
I'm fully unzipped.
Our producer and editor is Rachel Folk. Our music was created by A-Bomb. You can hear more of his music at A-Bomb Beats on SoundCloud and on Bandcamp. All of our art and design is created by Philip Wong. Special thanks to the Ann Arbor District Library for the use of their recording studio.
Please subscribe and download and review Super Skull Show on iTunes, if you would, please. The reviews are coming in, but we need more.
Make sure to check us out on the internet. We're all over it. Twitter, Instagram, and our website, Super Skull Show, is our handle.
Super Skull is brought to you by Vault of Midnight, Earth's finest comic books and stuff and podcasts since 1996. My name is Nick Weibar.
I'm Marcus Schwarmer.
And I'm Cowboy Curtis.
And we wish you good reading. Until next week. I want to know what your guys' relaxed wear is. But my relaxed wear is like Hank Azaria in The Birdcage. Like, he's basically wearing, like, underwear and a shirt that's been sliced into ribbons.
Ooh. Interesting.
That's, wow. That's me just hanging around, just mopping.
The amount of times I've seen The Birdcage is, like, 18
I
for some reason.
Movie. It's yeah. really good.
Yeah, so our sexy team. So that's Nick's outfit. Mine is, think Burt Reynolds from the movie Showgirls.
Yeah. Mm.
But
yeah.
with like a child's cowboy hat thrown into the mix.
Yeah, mine is
Wait, is there hold on. Are you it's and there's a you're wearing a vest?
I'm wearing a vest.
And no shirt.
In leather underpants.
Yeah.
No shirt. Cowboy boots. And a child-sized cowboy hat.
And you've got the little tassel that goes around your
yeah,
neck.
Yeah, no, it's yeah, you
that,
tie
like,
it under
it
your
on.
Chin. Yeah. yeah. Absolutely.
Wow, it's wonderful.
Marcus, what's your sexy team outfit?
I've pulled the image up for you to reference if you'd like to see it. But
oh, that's quite nice.
Yeah, it's a V.A.V. Sean Connery in Goldfinger. It's a periwinkle blue
a onesie?
Velvet onesie, but the onesie is shorts and short sleeve.
Yeah.
Oh, what's and that material?
That's velvet.
Wow.
Is that? Yeah, and it's...
Velvet?
Yeah, I think it's velvet. And it's got a very subtle... small white leather belt with a gold belt buckle on it that brings
but subtle,
the whole
it's
thing
classy.
It's classy.
It's understated.
The idea is that I've left my sanctuary of love, aka the bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
I need to go downstairs to like make some scrambled eggs.
Yeah.
So I slip into my velvet onesie, buckle my buckle,
yeah.
and I'm ready for my morning.
That's your egg making.
That's my egg making outfit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're gonna go make an omelet.
I'm gonna go make an omelet.
Mm-hmm. Lovely. Wow, our team's pretty sexy, guys.
As I come down the stairs, I see Curtis in his very small cowboy hat.
Can you just imagine if we were all three of us hanging out?
Looking like that?
Looking like that? It would be too much.
It'd be too much.
It would yeah. be a fucking, it'd be a sexy overload.
Yeah, if Eddie, I mean, I feel bad for the poor...
Oh my God, what if somebody wandered into that situation? They wouldn't be responsible for their actions at that
no,
point.
No, and I wouldn't blame them.
That's
no, there's not,
I wouldn't blame
not
them
a
one
jury
bit.
In the world
no.
that would convict them for no. whatever happened next.
Look,
whatever sex crimes were perpetrated.
If you see a man in a velvet onesie, you have to touch that onesie.
Yeah.
How do you not? Same with Nick's beautiful shredded t-shirt. It's just teasing you for what's underneath because you can see through the ribbon.
Yeah, that's the thing.
It's
a peak.
Tease.
It is.
And it's, but it's the dance moves mostly
yeah.
that pull it off.
Yeah.
It's the way that the whole ensemble works with the, in conjunction with the dance.
As
moves.
You
the ensemble.
Move, it yeah. flows with you is what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my God.
And against me
yeah.
when it has to.
I'm right there with you.
Throw in some lasso tricks, tiny lasso tricks. I think we just wrote a comic book and it's called Sexy Team.
Oh my God. A tiny little lasso. What's the name of the lasso?
I don't
you
know.
You named it. Yeah, you did. Come on, fucking go with it. Tell me what the name of it is.
I don't know. I didn't name
when
it.
When you get it out,
the
you,
tiny lasso.
You think of its name.
Oh God damn
like
it.
Its name is Rodriguez.
Yeah, I was going to say Jorge.
Why did we make it? Why did we give it a Hispanic sounding name?
But I'm just picturing the poor like male lady opening the door, and Nick and I are there, and then Curtis lasso.
No, I'm just
in.
Like this. I'm just twirling it. I'm just standing in the background twirling it.
Is that your dick or your lasso? What
That's
are you
my lasso.
Okay.
Oh, God.
Oh my Lord.
I'm just threatening to unleash the tiny lasso.
Rodriguez.
Jorge.